This is tea time. We're making a difference, one cup at a time.
Tea time.
Yeah, this is tea time.
We're
making a difference, one cup at a time.
Tea time.
So be sure to grab your tea, grab a seat, and tune in to Miss Liz.
Tea time. Making a difference, one cup at a time.
Tea time, yeah.
Tea time, time, time.
That's right. We are back here and it is a new week. So guess what? I have three new TEAs joining us this morning, this afternoon, and this evening. That's the way Miss Liz rolls every Thursday, 10 a.m., 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So check that out. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, you can go ahead and do that. Ring that little doorbell and you're going to be notified for every tea time that goes live and get that notification in your mailbox. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in, and I want to thank everybody for pushing me through last week when I was a little not myself. So I really want to thank everybody for that. But today I have the incredible Lori Condon here, who is a sales director, blogger, author, personal trainer. But we're going to take a little twist. You've seen the video of Global Media, but we're going to do a little something different because you see, I always get the guest in a little early and we're going to talk about her book. So and we're going to bring some awareness to an illness that I just found out about. So we're going to talk about that this morning. So if you have any questions or comments, leave them in the comment section or send them directly to Miss Liz. You know how it works. Miss Liz likes to keep everybody safe and protected. So let's get started. So let's do the disclaimer, the bio, and let's get Lori in here and let's spill a good TEA with you this morning. Disclaimer for Miss Liz's Tea Time Live Show. Miss Liz myself is going live using StreamYard. Before leaving a comment, please grant StreamYard permission to see your name at StreamYard.com. Please be advised that the content brought forward for any Tea Time Show hosted by myself, Miss Liz, is always brought forward in good faith. However, may bring forth dialogues and opinions that are not representative of my platform. The facts and information are perceived to be accurate at the given time of airing. All Tea Time guests and audience participants are responsible for using their good judgment in taking any action that may relate to the discussion. The content brought forward may include discussion for some where they may be emotionally at risk. It's significant to know that this show is engaging in discussion forums only to offer and inspire awareness and connection and is not providing therapeutic advice. If you have any questions and disclaimer or the panelist discussion, you may freely contact me, Miss Liz, through my email at bookingmissliz@gmail.com. Moving forward, should you choose to voluntarily participate in this show in any aspect, I myself, Miss Liz, welcomes you. And should you decide that the show is not made for you at this time, I respect those wishes and will see you at a later show at a later date and time. And again, all tea times this year in 2023 are done on a Thursday, unless it's a surprise tea time or a rescheduled tea time that's done on Monday or Tuesday. So now a little bit about my guests. So Lori Condon is a sales director at a global media company. She has been writing articles and blogs for 3 decades. Her first book, Keeping Fit on the Run, was purchased by a company for their sales team. She is a personal trainer and has had 2 books published by Black Rose Writing. The first called Everything is a Big Deal Until It's Not, which is a memoir. And the second is a novel entitled There's No Place Like Home. She lives with her husband and her son on Long Island. So let me get Lori in here and let's find out a little bit more about Lori and all of that good stuff. So good morning, Lori.
Good morning.
It is an honor to have you here this morning.
I'm grateful to you. Thank you.
So Lori, I am glad that we got to talk before we got started, because I always like to know a little bit, because sometimes, you know, we get things sent to us and then we're like, oh, so what else is there? So Lori, I want to start off with how I start off every tea time. Who were you as a little girl and who are you now as a grown woman?
Oh, interesting. So I think I was probably a little insecure as a little girl. And my parents had me, I was a surprise, a happy surprise, we'll call it, but they were older. So 48 and 52. So yeah, I know. So I have siblings much older. And I think because a lot of my friends thought my parents were my grandparents, I was always a little nervous. So not very confident, because again, I was always fearful that they would be taken from me, and you know, that makes sense.
Well, that there's just more and more surprises coming.
Oh,
to
there's
the table
a lot.
With you.
I'm glad you have an hour. Yeah.
We have an hour. So Lori, we do have a question here for you. I'm going to get into it right away with this question, because I want to get out of the way, and then I want to get it. So they want to know the global media company. They seen in the video that you work with global media. So is there a name for the company that you work for?
Yes, it's called the Channel Company, and it is a technology company. So bringing technology around the world. So big companies like your typical Dell, IBM, that type of tech.
Okay. So you're a techie girl.
No, I'm a media girl. So I actually communicate all the messages that the tech companies want to get out to. It's called the channel, which is not consumer. It's kind of business to business.
That's pretty cool. You know, you hear global media and right away you think, right? Oh, they're techie. They understand technology.
Yeah, no, there's a certain point that I'm like, above my pay grade. But what's fascinating is when I did start 30 years ago, it was a magazine only. And now it's conferences, it's social media, it's web, it's virtual people, virtual conferences. So it's really evolved. It's amazing.
So you're talking about magazines. So let's get into the writing, because you started writing at a young age.
Yeah.
So how young were you when you started?
I'm going to say my early 20s, if not before.
So what got you into writing?
So I had an eating disorder for the majority of my adolescence. And part of my recovery was trying to find other people that could make me accept getting over the other side. So I wanted to be normal. I wanted to start eating again. I wanted to find a way to balance and live in the world. And I needed to reach out to people to validate, you know, because I think one of the hardest things when you have an eating disorder to get over is when you're not living in it anymore and you're changing and you're all of a sudden going back to being like everyone else, you sort of feel like you failed. Even though it's a recovery and you're really making yourself better, it's a hard thing to grasp, because I was very good at starving myself. And that was what I kind of identified with. So I started writing to sort of get feedback from other people to help me normalize my recovery.
Which makes sense, you know, because it's a releasing system, right?
Yeah.
Writing. A lot of people don't realize that writing is it's a healing device. It's a way of us releasing, right?
And it kind of, you know, if you have to go through something tough, if you can help someone else get through something, then you feel like, all right, maybe there was a reason to go through it.
So Lori, I want to ask you, the Black Rose writing,
yeah.
How did you find them?
So my first book with them is called Everything is a Big Deal Until It's Not. And that was a book about me coming to terms with turning 50, which I still haven't accepted. And I've been 50 for a long time. 50 plus for a long time. But again, it was the same way that I wanted to put it out there and say, hey, how am I no longer young? How are these things happening to my body? Can someone help me accept this? And I did not want to self-publish again. So my first book, Keeping Fit on the Run, was self-published. I was very lucky. A company bought them all, but it was a big out-of-pocket expense, and I did not want to go that route. So with everything is a big deal until it's not, I gave myself a year. And I was going to write a query letter, which again, as I was doing this, if I knew all the steps it took to write a book and get it out there, it's a lot of work, which I didn't know, which was great that I didn't know. So I wrote that query letter every day. And after 4 months, I had two offers, and one of them was from Black Rose. And it's been a great marriage. I love working with them. They're really fantastic.
I think it's deeply important when you're giving, especially when you're giving your own work, right, to somebody, you want to be able to have that good connection. You want to be able to, you know, have that marriage relationship.
And they're very
right?
supportive. I feel like they really care. They're very responsive. So yeah, it's been really fun and exciting.
I just love the name Black Rose Writing. Like, you know, we don't talk about those black roses very often. So I think it would make a good title for a book, Black Roses. So I want to get into the first book that you wrote. So you said everything is a big deal. Until it's not. And that's a memoir. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I'm going to make a long story short. I started a book club. No, I was invited to a book club, I want to say about 8 years ago. And I was really excited. I felt like I was getting into a sorority. I mean, I was ready. And it was over this book, Me Before You, Jojo Moyes. And the book I loved, I couldn't wait to talk about it. I was all excited, couldn't wait for the meeting. And then I got uninvited because there was too many people. So I was like devastated. I blew it off and I'm like, no big deal. But I came home and I was like, I can't believe I'm not invited. So I have a very competitive spirit. And I'm like, you know what? I'm making my own book club and I'm going to invite some authors and they're going to come to my house and it's going to be better than any other book club. So I did do that. I contacted an author, Jane Green, and I said, how much money for you to come to my house? And she said, I'm not coming to your house. So I said, okay, that makes sense. You don't know me. I'm a stranger and et cetera. But she said, I will Skype in. So I got a spread of like sushi and wine and a gathering of all my friends. And Jane Green Skyped in and we talked about our book. And it was like really one of the best nights of my life because I love reading. She's someone I look up to, a mentor. I love every book she's written. And it was fascinating to hear sometimes how you interpret a book is not what the author meant. And we had a dialogue and I asked her a question and she's like, gee, I never thought about that. So it was just fascinating and fun and exciting. And I'm like, I'm doing this. So for 5 years, I had a book club where actually I did end up having the authors come to my house. I mean, some New York Times bestselling authors. Fantastic experience. Fast forward, I had Sally Hepworth at my house with her husband. We were doing her book club. And I said, you know, in college, I started writing a book and it was so funny and I stopped. And I'm like, why don't you write the book and dedicate it to me? And once again, she said, I'm not writing your book for you. I'm like, oh, darn it. So anyway, the book was called Don't Waste My Eggs. And each egg was a boyfriend. Right. So I had a rotten egg, a hard boiled egg, and, you know, over easy. So all these different chapters, each chapter was a boyfriend named after an egg. I couldn't remember all the eggs, and I didn't really want my husband to know about all the eggs. So I scrapped that. And she said, you should write about something that's on your mind. And what was on my mind was turning 50. So I said, I don't know why I am obsessed with it. I feel fine. I have everything going for me. I'm not sickly or anything, but turning 50 for me feels awful. I can't see anymore. I have lumps in areas that I don't know. And I just was not embracing it well. And I'm like, that's what I'm going to focus on. But when I started writing, I was thinking, you know, getting into high school was a big deal. Finding a boyfriend was a big deal. Getting my first job was a big deal. And everything's a big deal until it's not, because you go through it and then you're through it, which is the same way turning 50 was, because now I'm 54 and it's no big deal. So that's how that. So my sister had asked me, you know, what's this book about? I'm like, well, you know how everything's like such a big deal and then you get through it and it's not. She's like, there's your title. And that's how it came about.
Wow. That, you know, I'm going to be 50 in May, and I'm starting to have panic attacks.
You might want to read a book that I could recommend.
Like, I'm like you, Lori. Like we've been through all of these things. Like I've been through childbirth. I've been through marriage, divorce, but there's just something about 50 that is starting to really just set in.
It's the and other I'm side like, of the hill.
Right.
Yeah.
It really is. So I want to do something really big for myself, like something really empowering. So I want to take a trip by myself.
Ooh.
And do some kind of soul searching and inner work. So, but Lori, I would have never gave you over 50. Like,
oh, thank you. Thank you
like,
so much.
Not at all. Like, you look good. You're doing well for 50. Like, I'm going to have to get some pointers from you after the show, because I don't know. I'm starting to have these panic attacks. Every night I'm going to bed and I'm waking up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm getting 1 day closer to that 50.
But you know what? Again, the way to look at it is no one knows how long they have, right? And you just have to be so grateful every day that you wake up and have the opportunity to do it again. And when I look at where I am now, my family, with my career, et cetera, like I'm so grateful. And if you can just focus on that instead of anticipating, because you know what? The things that, you don't even think about or what blindside you. It's not what you worry about. It's something coming out of the blue. So there's no point.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Here, my guest is comforting me. Well, I'm going to thank you, Lori, for that. But I really like the name of that book. Did you ever do that? Don't Waste My Ace. Did you ever write that book?
No. And the worst part is, because I am of the ripe old age of 54, I feel like it was handwritten. Like I couldn't find it. You know, I couldn't find my notes. And I will tell you, I'm not going to get into the details of it, but one of the chapters before my father passed, we just had a very funny joke over it. It was really fun, but I don't know where it is. So it's gone. So if anyone wants to write it and dedicate it to me, I'm fine with that.
Or you'll be told I'm not writing it for you.
Yeah.
Right. I want to get into the blogging. So you started blogging at the age of 20, Lori. So have you continued blogging to this day?
You know, I've done some. Sometimes people will ask me to comment, or if I'm passionate about something that I read, I'll respond to it. I have done some. And again, a large part of my side gigs focus around fitness. I am a personal trainer. I read a lot about fitness. And as someone who's recovered from an eating disorder, sometimes I blog on things like that, you know, that I find I have a passion or I have an opinion on. So I blog when it's relevant.
So for the viewers out there that don't know what blogging is, could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a kind of like a little, it's a short type of paragraph or a response to something that someone's commented on. Or if you have an opinion, it's like an op-ed type of opportunity to respond to something that you've read.
Awesome. So what's the difference between blogging and article writing?
I think blogging is a little shorter, in my opinion. You know, usually there's more of a plan, I think, behind an article, like a little more research but blogging is just like kind of, it's almost like a dialogue, I think.
So like a conversation.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. So I'm learning so much as we're speaking this morning too. Like, and thank you for the questions, guys. I really appreciate them. So I want to get into the first book that you wrote, because we jumped into the second one, but your very first book that you wrote was Keeping It Fit on the Run. So how old were you when you wrote that one?
It was 2003, like around 32. 32-ish. Yeah. So I'm a salesperson. I sell media for that global media company. And with media sales, there's a lot of travel. And as I mentioned, I've had some struggles with my weight in terms of excessive dieting and then excessive exercise. And when you travel, or at least when I travel, it throws me out of my routine, which makes me very uncomfortable. So the way I solve my problems is through writing. So I decided to write a book called Keeping Fit on the Run. And it was kind of a guide on how to eat healthy and get your exercise in when you're traveling and your schedule is not routine. So the book itself is spiral bound. It opens, so it folds open, so you could take it in your hotel room, put it on the floor, open it up, and do the exercises in it. And it has a hotel room workout, and it tells you how to order off a menu and gives you basic facts about nutrition and things you might not know have hidden calories, et cetera, and how, you know, drinking is fattening and all those good tips.
So how did you come about writing that one?
Because I had to deal with it. So I was traveling and I was very anxious about it. I was like, I don't like not having my routine. I, you know, I always get up, have coffee, exercise, and start my day. And sometimes the meetings, there's breakfast meetings. So maybe the gym wouldn't be open, or maybe the menu didn't have egg whites and whatever. So I needed to have a plan. And this helped me feel organized and having a way to navigate my own travel. Well, so it seems as I use my writing to sort of validate my anxieties.
So you talked about having an eating disorder and anxiety. So Lori, do you have tools and tips out there for anybody who is going through that right now?
Yeah. I mean, again, there's, so the hard thing about having an eating disorder is you have to eat your entire life. So it's not like you can give it up like other coping mechanisms. And the hard thing is there's a lot of fast foods out there because we're in a very fast paced society, and a lot of misinformation on labels and deceiving, you know, practices out there. I'm not a fan of the craze with the Ozempic. I don't want to get into, you know, that's not my expertise at all, but like everyone wants a quick fix. Yep. So it took decades for me to get over learning how to be comfortable with food. And again, I sort of am a very extreme. So after the food thing, I was like, okay, I can eat, but now I'm going to exercise to an extreme. And so I had to find balance there. So it's kind of as you get older. So one of the things that's great about getting older is you find peace with resolving all these issues. So now I balance my food, I balance my exercise, and I'm sure I have some other thing that I'm obsessed with now, but I don't really know what that is. Maybe I work too much.
But that's what they say, right? When you have an addiction to something is when you handle that addiction, you go into a different addiction, yes. Right? It's known to do that. It's that addictive mindset.
Yep. Right? Yes. So again, the advice I have is to just try to be kind to yourself. And, you know, it's funny as a trainer, as, you know, as different roles where I get to give advice to people, I'm like, man, if I would only take my own advice, you know, I'll say, don't be so extreme. Don't be so hard on yourself. Yet I, you know, negative self-talking. So sometimes you have to listen.
Yeah. It's that mirror, right? We got to look at the mirror and say, oh, what I'm saying, I have to do.
100%.
Yeah. We don't talk a lot about the mirror. You know, a lot of people are scared of the mirror. You know, there's an exercise when I was in one of my groups where we had to hold a mirror and look at it and actually tell them what we seen when we looked in the mirror, and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I was just like, nope, I'm not doing this.
I wouldn't want to do it.
You know, because I seen this ugly monster. Like, I was just like, because I had gone through so much abuse and trauma and that. So I was just like, nope, not doing it, not looking at it. But years later, the mirror is one of my routines that I do daily. Every time I go to the bathroom and I wash my hands, I look in the mirror and I'm just like, you got this. Okay, you're in pain, but be grateful for the pain because somebody else doesn't have that pain, but you have that pain. There's a reason and lesson behind it, right? And then I started buying markers where you could write on the mirror. So when I would go in, I'd be like, oh, who wrote on the mirror? Oh, yeah, that was me. So it was just like, keep the humor going, but also talk to the mirror because you shouldn't be afraid of yourself, you know?
That's really good self-care, advice. So. Yeah.
So I want to get into the book because we talked about it before we went live about this illness that you share about in your last book. And you do have a hard copy. So if you could hold it up so the viewers could see that. So let's get into that book. And that book is called There's No Place Like Home. I like that. I like the name, you know.
Thank you. So the book is based on something that actually did happen in my life. And I thought it was such a fascinating story. I wanted to share it. My husband was adopted and decided to see if he could find his biological family. And he signed up for Ancestry.com, you know, thinking, hey, maybe we have a sister, maybe we have some more family out there, which we both, I have a very small family, so I welcome anyone who wants to join. And he got a response, I think it was months later, from a half-sister who said, I think we share the same father. And it was so exciting, and we were thrilled to learn that we had, you know, more family. And then he, you know, one of the things when you're adopted, you go to doctor's appointments and the doctors say, is there any medical history I should know about? And he would always have to say, I don't know. So he asked his half-sister, is there anything I should be worried about? And she said, yes, you have to run out and get genetic testing. Our father had a gene called Lee-Fermani syndrome. And if you test positive for the mutation, you can't suppress cancer. So all of a sudden, we went from being really excited to being just horrified and scared and panicked. So he called his doctor, made an appointment, and went for genetic testing. And the results take 3 weeks. Wow. So for 3 weeks, every day, you know, there's things that you worry about, bills you worry about, things you worry about that come up every day, and they're so stupid. And all of a sudden, we were faced with this. This could be like life-threatening. And we waited. And I'm spoiler alert. My book is different than this story. My husband does not have the gene, but he learned that there's 8 siblings and 5 of them have died from it. So it was nothing we ever had known about. But I mean, it's just horrifying. And that sister that we met passed. So the book that I wrote, There's No Place Like Home, is dedicated to her because we only had a relationship with her for, I feel like it might have been a year, but it was so warm and impactful and again, game changing. And another thing that came up with the testing is if, God forbid, he had that gene, my son would have to be tested every 3 months. So it just really was a very horrifying time. And I'm grateful to say, again, I don't want to spoil anything. And the book is a novel. So I take a lot of liberties and it goes in a completely different path. But that's what gave me the idea to write it.
Well, like you were saying before we went live, is a lot of people thought it was your story, right? Like it was.
Oh,
like-
my God. Yeah. So the the female character in the book gets involved and she's having a midlife crisis and she starts, her friend gives her some drugs. She likes them. She starts selling them, you know, and some of my friends thought I was selling drugs. I'm like, now, come on. Don't you know me? So no, I don't sell drugs. And I have not taken the drug I talk about, but yeah. So it's a novel.
So Lori, this illness that you mentioned, how rare is it?
1 in 20,000.
Wow. So, and you said that you found out because of Ancestry that your
Ancestry.com. Yeah. So he swabbed his cheek and sent it in and found that his half sister and that they had shared DNA and was able to trace back. But in this one particular family of 8 kids, 5 of them had it and lost their battle. Wow. So they all had a form of it's soft tissue cancer, like sarcomas. just horrific and young. Like one of them was 19, one of them was 30. So very young. His sister, wow, who just passed, 63.
Yeah, that is young. Yeah. Right. We just never know, but it gives you that life awakening, right? Like you said, like you worry about all the crazy, stupidest little things, and then right? you get this, right? And then you're like, whoa, I'm not worrying about that anymore.
A really cool thing that came out of it is one of his brothers lives in France, speaks fluent French, and we communicate with him via Google chat because it translates. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to. But they look so similar. So looking at them, it's just bizarre, and they have very similar interests. So that was a really cool thing that came out of it. And in the dialogue in the book, a lot of it is verbatim. So I interviewed all of the siblings that I could and the husbands of the sister who passed. So that's all for real.
So did your husband get to meet them in person?
Not yet, but it was COVID, and they live in Canada and France, so not yet.
Oh, in Canada. So you can come visit me.
Yes, we could make it a real trip.
So is there any plans of meeting the siblings in the future?
We've talked about it for sure, but, you know, making plans is, we put things off, which, again, that's a good lesson. Should not put things off, but we don't have a date yet.
So how did you come about the name? There's No Place Like Home.
Yeah, this is a silly story, but that song by Rupert Holmes, I forget what it's called. If you like Pina Colada, you know that song?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so that song is about the personals prior to the internet, right? So the guy puts an ad in the newspaper. He's bored with his relationship. He goes to a bar to meet this person he met through the personals, and it turns out it's his same person. Wow. He meets his, yeah. So in my head, I'm thinking, you know, relationships start out very exciting, and then they get into a routine, and then you spend a lifetime with each other, and, you know, it gets boring or just normal, ordinary. And perhaps you forgot the real reason that you got together. And then you have a crisis, you know, you say, for better or for worse. In my book, the characters start trying to resolve their own issues on their own instead of in the partnership that they committed to. And when things get tough and they think back to how great their relationship started and why they got together, they decide to turn to each other again. And it sort of made me think of like a family, and that there's no place like home. So it's about the relationship, what I envision to be a good relationship as a family, and how we have to remember what's important in a marriage, in a family, friendships.
Right. Yeah. We don't talk about there's no place like home or home sweet home. You know, we see them all over on plaques and pictures, and but we don't understand the word home. Mm-hmm. No, we don't come back home. You know, we don't work on the connection, the relationship, right?
Yep.
I think it's really empowering. And if you could hold up the cover again, because I think the colors are really, I want to talk about the colors, how you got the colors in there.
Well, so I love the look of flowers on a book. And so here's the symbol of marriage. This is adoption papers. And then again, I just find flowers very comforting, and I love pink. So there you go.
I like it, because the next guest that's coming this afternoon, her favorite color is pink.
Oh, it's good.
So I'm just like, and then I see flowers on your book. I'm like, oh, the universe again is working, doing its magic. Right? We just never know, right?
Yes.
So I want to get into the storyline. So for you to write that story, to write that as a novel, knowing that you had this going on in your life, how hard was it?
It was actually easy until, so it was easy for 70% of it. And my book was taking a negative path. And because I fell in love with my character, I changed it. I couldn't go where I started. So the plan changed. And I, you know, every writer has a different way of doing things. I don't outline what I'm going to write about. I write and I get into character. So each time I'm writing a persona, I'm feeling like I'm that person and responding how I think that person would respond. So when I got to about 70% through, I'm like, I can't kill Gary. I love him.
I like him too much. He's so cute.
I'm like, no, I can't. So I stopped for a bit and I'm like, how can I wrap this up? That's real. So it's got to be realistic. It's got to have a storyline that makes sense. But again, I wasn't ready to get rid of him.
So is Gary like your dream guy?
Gary is sort of like my husband. So when I write it, like I write what I know. Yeah. So some of the responses are how I think my husband would be, which 20 years later, I still feel like there's no place like home. I'm married 20 years, 19, but I would do it again. Same guy.
Well, it's always nice when we can add our family members in, right? But then it's like you said, 70%, then you're like, ooh, I can't do this.
Yeah, I was like, that is not a good path. That's going to make me really sad. And I didn't want people to, there's sad parts in the novel. And again, there's real stuff in there that happens to all of us. We all have, no one has it perfect. We all have our situations, but it's kind of your coping, how you get through them that determines how you're going to come out the other side.
So by writing this book and by finding the siblings on Ancestry, what else have you learned about this illness?
Well, there's just nothing great about this illness. There's no cure. So, if anything, what I thought was really interesting is his half sister's children did not check if they had the gene. And I was a little judgy. I'm like, of course you should check because you can do preventative screenings. However, my mother had Alzheimer's for 15 years and I have not gone to check if I have the gene because if there's no cure, I don't want to know. So I kind of was hypocritical when I was making that, like, how could you not check? But I don't want to know because I don't want to live every day waiting to, and I still do. I test my memory. I'm like, who's in that movie? Name three actors in The Breakfast Club. I do that every day. I try to test myself to see if I'm,
But it goes back to that mirror, right?
Yeah.
It's, we judge something that we don't understand, but then when it comes back to us mirroring, it's like you said, hypocritical, right? But it's scary. It's the unknown, can I have it? Do I want to know if I have it?
And it's like I don't want to know.
If there's no cure, why do I want to know, right? Yep.
Yeah.
If you can't fix me, why do I want to know I have it?
And so that was really an eye opener because I thought about it, and which I always do. I think about why would I do something differently? But then I thought, well, I didn't. I have a different disease in my bloodlines and I didn't check. So there you go.
Well, I think it's the inner cup, right? It's the inner home. Coming back to home again, mm-hmm. I think it fits really well with your story is because, things scare us and things make us look at life a little different, the little things that we used to complain about were like, oh, I'm not going to waste my time on that anymore.
Right.
And it's like when you, at the beginning of the conversation, you talked about being 50, getting uncomfortable in 50. Why are women so afraid of 50? It's a big thing, but I think it's like half of a lifespan or something. I don't know what's going on with the 50, but.
Remember I mentioned my book club when I had Jane Green Skype in, she told me it was a book that she wrote. I forget which book it was. But one of the things that inspired her to write it is she was walking in Manhattan. She said, she got off the train and she thought she looked pretty good. And she walked into this crowd and no one paid attention to her. And she said she felt invisible. And I think that's something that we feel as we age, like we're not the center of attention maybe anymore, or however that feeling is of just being invisible. And I think that's kind of, and then we don't really treat our elders very well. If you look at the culture, and look, my mom had to go into a nursing home, which I hated, but I couldn't take care of her. She had dementia as bad as it could be. And I certainly couldn't take care of her. But, you know, in different cultures, you don't do that. You bring your family home with you, home.
Yeah.
So it's all these things that we read about, we learn about that are scary, and then they happen. So.
Yeah. And we always come right back home, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's scary to go home, you know, like when you were younger and you did something you weren't supposed to, you didn't want to go home.
Right. Exactly.
So Laurie, I want to get into your T. So if I give you the letters TEA, what words would you give me this morning for my listeners?
I think since, you know, you told me 5 minutes before, I was like, oh my God, but they're pretty easy for me. I would say teaching, empathy and awareness.
So you want to tell me why?
Yeah, I just think that, again, I've always tried to take something bad that I've been through and turn it into an opportunity to help someone else. It's healing, first of all, right? Like, so selfishly, it's to make myself feel better. But it's also, why would you go through such tough things if it wasn't to help someone else? So I look at them all as teaching moments.
So the empathy, where does that come in?
You know, before it was a cool thing, my mom was a philanthropist and always helping other people. And I feel when someone's hurting, I feel it in my heart. And I do think I am empathetic, and I want to help. Anytime I can, I want to help. So.
And the books are for the awareness.
They're multi reason. So they're cathartic. So they help me get out my anxieties. I don't like to hold anything in. If I have something on my mind, I do not hold it in. I get it out. If I feel anxious about something, or if I'm angry about something, I do not bottle it up. I get it out. I think that's a cancer. So cathartic, but also I think it's refreshing to hear a lot of times when I do book clubs, people are like, that happened to me, or I felt like that. I didn't think anyone else had that feeling. I'm all like, well, why wouldn't you talk about it? That's why I had to write the books. I need other people to tell me these things, to validate my own feelings. So I think that I put it out there because I want to, number one, validate my feelings, but I want other people to realize that's how every human being, we're all the same. I mean, we may have different, you know, paths, but we all have the same innate needs and feelings for the most part.
Right. I really just want to thank you, Laurie, for sharing your story today, you know, and bringing awareness to this illness. So if you could you tell us what the illness is again that you mentioned in the book?
Yes, it's called Lee-Fromani syndrome.
So if anybody would like to know anything about that, is there a website or anything that they can find?
There is a website, but I'm not prepared.
No, and so that's Google okay. I just want to let people know that if they want to find out more about it, because you just never know who's out there, right?
I want to get into it. And it will come up. Yeah.
I want to get into Ancestry. So whose idea was that to get that started?
My husband. Yeah, like I know, and you know, and there's another one, I think it's 23andMe. And that was like a phase at the time. My sister did it, you know, and but again, when I'm not adopted, but I can imagine a feeling of just wondering what that other life was like. And I'm an avid reader, and there's tons of these stories of people being adopted and wanting to understand their roots. So I don't think when you sign up, you expect to have a story like this one. And again, if you read the book, everything about that story, including the murder is real.
murder. So she's talking about a murder, guys. So you want to really go out and grab this book, because just, you know, the cover does not tell you that there's a murder. You played it well with those flowers. Can you give us just a little insight on the murder? Not too much, because I want people to go out and grab the murder.
I cannot. It'll ruin it. So you're going to have to read it.
See, and that's what it is, right? It's the flowers. guys, go buy the book because the flowers are going to tell you the secrets. So Lori, I want to get into personal trainer because you're a personal trainer.
Yes.
So what gave you, not gave you, but what got you into personal training?
My eating issues. So when I was recovering, I was like, how am I ever going to be able to eat like a normal human being again and just allow myself, like I, you know, so there's a whole education, about food and I had to really train myself to think, and I'm a foodie. So it stinks to have an eating disorder and be a foodie. Like when I eat, I really enjoy food. I love it, which is why I became scared of it and had to find a way to find a middle ground. And exercise for me was a way to start healing and trying to trust my body to burn food the right way. I look at it as, oh, shoot. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, phew. My internet went out for a minute. Sorry.
Yeah, I seen the little glitch. I was like,
Oh no. Yeah. So I look at food as high octane gasoline from your vessel, your machine, which is your body. And so I try to put really good food into my body and I try to take care of it by exercising, and that keeps the balance. And along the way, I started, I'm not plant-based 100%, but 3 days a week, I do plant-based eating just because I feel like that's a great way to have medicine, food as medicine, as opposed to pills as medicine. So I try my best to just take care of myself, and exercise is one of those things.
So how long have you been a personal trainer?
Since 1995.
Wow.
Going on 30 years. Yeah. Yep.
Is there something that you learned about yourself over the years being a personal trainer?
I think I really like being a teacher. I think I really get something out of just learning something. And then again, there's a theme, trying to share it with others. And it's a gift to me. It's really helped me come over this hurdle again. Of the food issues. Like it's Thanksgiving and I'm actually looking forward to eating. So that's a gift, right? That's a gift for someone who for two decades couldn't allow myself to enjoy.
I was just about to get into Thanksgiving because of an eating disorder. How is the holidays for you?
Fantastic. Now, grateful. What am I thankful that I was able to really, I would say not 100%, 97% get over. There's still, when I eat too much, I'm like, oh, why did I do that? I feel terrible. But so does everyone. But for the most part, I am grateful to be around love and family, and food is an expression of love, you know?
So and I think everyone does it, right? At Thanksgiving, we all eat too much. And mm-hmm. Christmas is another time we eat all too much. Like the holidays, we just eat too much.
Yes.
You know, it's like that turkey. We're just stuffed. We're just.
Indulgence. Yep.
So do you have any plans for Thanksgiving?
Yes. I'm going to a dear friend's. I was invited and I'm just bringing the cookies. So this is like the first year in forever that I'm not cooking, and I'm happy about it.
So Lori, we have a question here about book clubs. So what did you get from creating a book club?
Oh, so again, there's all different types of book clubs. There's some book clubs that don't read the book and it's an excuse to get together and drink.
Oh,
my book club was, there was homework. Yeah. You had to read the book, and just fascinating discussion. And again, because it was such a unique book club where I had the authors either physically here or Skyping in, that's how it was for 5 years. Every time we met, you got a perspective from the author, which you may have not interpreted when reading it yourself. And that was, to me, just amazing to understand what created the story and how it was written. Cause every author has a different process.
Well, and did you feel that you got different perspectives on each book?
Oh my, amazing, like just amazing. And I've met such, I mean, some of these authors to me are my idols, right? So to be able to be in the room with them and ask them questions, it's a dream come true for a book lover.
I can imagine, right? Because everyone reads a book in a different light, you know. Some people
I devour them. I mean, I read a novel a week easily.
Oh wow!
Oh yeah,
yeah. I can read a book really fast if it's an interesting book. If it's something that, you know, but if it's something that I'm not into, it's like I'll read one or two pages and then.
Well,
like,
I allow myself I push to stop. Myself. Yes, if I don't like a book, I allow myself to stop. For a while, I had to finish it, and I'm like, this is not homework. I can stop. So, yeah.
So have you ever thought of taking your book club and creating a book with some of the people who have joined a book club?
No. A lot of people have said, oh, we should write a book together. And I'm like, no, no. I've done my books. It's a lot of work. And again, I think collaborating would make it even harder because it's a big commitment. And then the editing process is another long, hard, difficult road. And so to have another opinion, I just don't think that would go well for me.
Yeah. Well, writing a book, there are a lot of steps. I myself am a writer, and I'm just like, it's not as easy as everybody thinks. It's not just put in words. You know, there's the editing, then there's the publishing, then there's the marketing, then there's it's so much work. You know, and you have agreed. To be willing to want to do it. You have to be determined, right?
Yes, agreed.
So do you think that it helped that you were a sales marketer that with your books?
Absolutely. Because, you know, once it's done, unless you get it out there, which again, it's hard to do. So really, you need money to promote it. And I keep saying that I'm going to invest more in promoting it and getting it out there in my free time. But pretty busy. but it is a goal. And again, I just need someone very influential like you, Miss Liz, to get it out there.
Well, we're going to do our best this morning. For all the audio listeners out there, if you want to see the video and you want to see the cover of the book so you can find out a little bit about the murder with the flowers.
The murder.
Go to the YouTube channel and check that out and you can see the video there. Or check out the Spotify. It's also video there. But the rest of the platforms are all audio. So for the audio listeners out there, what message do you have for them about your books?
I just hope you get something from them, that you take them with, the intent. It's just my story and everyone has a different way to interpret, but I just wanted to share. I want to be honest and I think, by being vulnerable, that's how we connect in the world, to show that, you know, there's all these pretty pictures and all these, you know, facades, but people are human and have things, idiosyncrasies, and we're all kind of similar.
Absolutely. You know, and everyone sees things differently, you know, different perspectives. You might see a blue as a sky or blue as water. So I'm talking about blue because your favorite color is navy blue. So why navy blue?
I don't know. I just love it. And I am a Yankee fan, but I think navy blue came first. I don't know.
Sorry,
and actually,
Yankees.
And I'm wearing it. This was not planned. Yeah.
I just like to slide those in, like, you know, like the colors of blue and sky and water and all that. It's because colors resonate with us, right? And like,
yeah,
it's before the Yankees. So
I don't know. It's very warm to me.
And I asked you one word to describe yourself and you gave me tenacious.
Tenacious.
So why that word?
Because I, even though things are intimidating to me, I always just go for it. And I say, why not me? And that's just how my mind works, which is apparently not how everyone thinks. But I always just think, why wouldn't I try? So I guess that's tenacity.
I love, you know, asking that question to my guests because it tells me a lot about them, you know, and some people struggle with one word. They're like, Miss Liz, that's a really hard one to answer. you know, because it's we always feel like we want to tell the person what we think they want to hear, right? But I'm asking you to self-reflect. It's going back to that mirror, coming back home. What makes you who you are, right? And I love the way that you flowed your story and told your story this morning with all of the listeners out there. So what final message do you have for everybody out there?
Just be kind. It's a really hard world right now. Just help each other and try to be compassionate and pay it forward.
I love it. Pay it forward, especially on Thanksgiving, right? We got to pay it forward.
Thanksgiving. Be thankful.
Right? Share the turkey.
Be thankful, appreciative, and pay it forward, right?
So I want to get in. We got a couple minutes left here. What is your favorite meal on Thanksgiving?
I like the side dishes. I'm going to say I like the stuffing and I like macaroni and cheese. I was thinking about it. I'm not really turkey is not my favorite. No. How about you?
Oh my goodness. It's the sides for me. Mm-hmm. It's like the, you know, all the different salads that come to the table and the platters. Because, you know, when you go to family and friends, they always do these different platters or different things, right? Or different sides. And you're like, what is that? And then you want to try it, right? Because you want to be grateful. You want to be thankful for the food. So you want to try something. I always like trying something different. I always like bringing something different to the table as well. If I'm cooking the meal, I'll look for a new recipe or something.
I have a good one. I make stuffing cupcakes.
Oh.
So you put them in a muffin tin. It's cheese, mayonnaise, broccoli, stuffing. I think that might be it. I have to look at my recipe. And then you stir them up and you put them in muffin tins and you bake them. They're delicious.
Oh, I've never even thought of doing that.
Uh-huh.
You know, you always have stuffing in a bowl, right? Or stuffing in a turkey.
No,
or
cupcake.
Oh, yeah. Christmas is coming. Our Thanksgiving in Canada was in October, so I can't do it today.
Everything's better with a little cheese.
Right? You have to add cheese.
So there was cheddar cheese in there if I didn't mention that.
Yeah. I say cheese or bacon. If it doesn't have bacon, then, you know, you gotta have the bacon. Yeah, well, thanks for that recipe. I really appreciate those recipes, right? Like, you just never know what comes on Tea Time with Miss Liz. You get recipes, you get murder, get coming home, you get mirrors. You just never know where Miss Liz is going in the morning, right? we just take it on a different flow. Before we wrap up, though, I want to get out there that you are part of the Author Guild's advocates and authors. So could you tell us really quickly what that is?
Yeah, actually, the Authors Guild is really just help in terms of helping authors navigate how to get published. And so, for example, when I got the contract from Black Rose Writing, I did not know how to read it. And I thought, oh, my God, now I'm going to have to hire a lawyer. You know, I didn't want to go through that process. And my sister-in-law and my brother are both authors. So my sister-in-law suggested that I join the Authors Guild, and they literally, for the fee of joining for a year, which is nominal, reviewed my contract to make sure it was ironclad. And they told me it was a great contract, told me where to negotiate a little, and just eased my mind. Cause again, that's a lot of things I didn't consider when writing a book, you know?
Well, and that's it, right? We need to know the information because you can't, you know, you can write a book, but there's so many different levels and so many different avenues that if you're taking a different genre, you have to know what's accepted. If you're going for awards for your books, you have to know those guidelines as well. You know, some people write not for awards, but some people do, you know, because they want those writer awards. They want to be acknowledged in that. So there's so many different levels. And I found it really interesting. When you go to the website, there is a lot of information there on guidelines and stuff like that.
Oh, And they helped me with my website, too.
Oh, and it's awesome. So everybody check out your website. So, Lori, if you'd like to read it out for the audio listeners out
there. Sure. It's www.lauricondonauthor.com. And it's Lori, LauriCondonAuthor.com.
Thank you so much. And it was a real pleasure having you today on Tea Time. And I will be back for the second Tea Time at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with Claire Kumar, who is Inclusive Diversity Productivity. We're going to talk about all that good stuff. And we're going to talk about some hot pink. So like the flowers that were on Lori's book, we're going to take it into the afternoon show. And that's how we roll. And I'll see everybody at 3 p.m. for the second Tea Time of today.
Thank you.